Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It's Owen, Ken and Simon here with the second of your Monday Second Captain's Pods. Murph has taken a well-deserved day off after delivering easily the most cogent analysis of his podcasting career to date on last Thursday's episode. Hey, Ken. Hey, Si.
Hey, Owen.
Hey, well-deserved. How are you?
Well, just based purely on the fact that you finally got something
just
right.
Just one thing, yep.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The Republic of Ireland play the world's number one ranked USA team in back-to-back matches next Saturday and the following Tuesday. We're only a few months away from the World Cup itself. So when our captain, Katie McCabe, left the Emirates last Wednesday night in a moon boot and on crutches following a crunching tackle in the closing stages of Arsenal's Champions League win against Bayern Munich, we could all be forgiven for fearing the worst. All of us, that is, except Ciarán.
In the closing stages.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's what's giving me hope here. Because when I rewatched the clip, I did see up in the top left-hand corner of the screen, 88 minutes gone. And so there is a chance that this is just shithousery.
No.
Why would she be wearing the boot afterwards then?
Because they really commit to the shithousery. This is top-class shithousing. The Bayern Munich players are over there, well, listen, it's a fair cop, you know? She really was injured. Did he, like, you guys are playing checkers. Katie McCabe is playing chess.
Yeah, I see what you're saying here.
Yeah.
So I remain
absolute
hopeful.
Idiot.
I think you might just have lost your mind.
Our tone was incredulous there, Ken, let's be honest.
Why would she be wearing the boot afterwards then?
But she was, in fact, named in Vera Pauw's squad for the USA Games the following day. And yesterday, in a crucial match against Manchester City in the middle of a four-way title race, she not only started, but scored an absolute pinger of a goal to win it for Arsenal. So she's all right. Our fears are misplaced. Murph was right. Would you like to take this opportunity to publicly apologise for this?
Yeah, I do. I apologise. He got it right again. What?
I think that was you saying you've lost your mind in with maybe a sound effect was added in post production.
You're
happy to put your hand
the moon boot really
threw
you.
I'm delighted.
The moon boot, the crutches. This was really elaborate. Obviously, Katie had to keep up the pretense of the injury on her post-match interview on Arsenal TV.
Katie, 72 hours ago, we saw you in a moon boot in crutches.
Yeah.
First thing off, are you actually made of steel?
Obviously, I'm happy this guy came back clear. And then, obviously, yeah, fantastic. My medical team kind of done a quick turnaround. And I think I've been icing my foot for the last 4 days, so it was worth it in the end.
Even her manager, Jonas Eidevall, went along with it. On Wednesday, she was in the boot. She told me straight away, I am playing on Sunday. Of course, you don't believe that. Then she went for a scan. It looked better than we thought. Me and her spoke a bit and she said, I'm here. We didn't even have her out kicking long balls on Saturday just to save her foot. Then she plays 80 minutes after the yellow card, which was extremely harsh, and she tops it off with that goal. This period is the best we've seen Katie McCabe since I've been a coach here. She has been a tremendous player during these months. Well, it is easier to play well when you're in the team, Jonas. So don't go dropping her again like you did earlier in the season, all right?
Yeah. You know, he had his reasons. No, but I'm glad I've obviously had my own moon boot issues in recent times.
Yeah, that was sort of a false injury as well, wasn't it? Sorry, I'm just drinking a cup of tea here. It's taking a pause. Well, I mean, it was as in you were in a moon boot and we all felt very sorry for you. We thought we mightn't see you for months. And then it all seemed to be kind of all right.
No, it wasn't a false injury, as you say. It was a real injury, but it wasn't as serious as I had originally been led to believe by the original X-ray, which showed a fracture. But, of course, the fracture was 32 years old. So they're like, well, you know, you've kind of been... You're a clumsy man, and this is part of the reason why. Do you really want us to fix that? We could get in there. We could drill a pin in there and fix that together. But like, it's not really worth it, is it? I mean, the stadia. This is pretty much what the doctor said to me. And I was kind of like, all right, well, I suppose I'll just clump around on this for the rest of my life.
Hopefully many, many years.
However long it is. So hopefully Cape's feet are in slightly better shape.
No, I think they are. Yeah, they can certainly kick a football ball with a lot more precision, as we saw again at the weekend. We've had a phenomenal reaction to...
A football ball,
yeah. We've had a...
Pick it up on all mistakes from now on.
Yeah,
that's the rule.
That's the way to do it. Here. We've had a phenomenal reaction to last Friday's pod when we spoke to the parents of Red Oak Murphy, the Sligo footballer who died by suicide around this time last year. Redmond and Geraldine spoke incredibly movingly about their son and about how they want as many people as possible to hear their story in the hope of potentially helping others. We did put that episode out free to everyone at the time, so in case you missed it, you can go back and listen whether you're a member or a non-member. We have got a GA pod tomorrow coming up with Paul Flynn and Michael Murphy since the league finals and ahead of the start of the championship next weekend. That one is for World Service members. Our guest today is Leinster back rower Jack Conan, Simon, who played a major part in Saturday's Champions Cup win against Ulster at a rain-soaked, sold-out Aviva Stadium. Donal Lennon did the needful by awarding him the Player of the Match award. It was between himself and another back rower, Ryan Baird. Jack Conan got the nod then. So just it was nice of Donal to pick this specific back rower just around the time we were planning to talk to him.
Well, that's our new rule as well, is we only speak to Man of the Match award winners from
therefore
now on.
Therefore, only ever back rowers. But the last time we had him on was when he... I'll ask you about the game itself in a minute, but the last time we had Jack Conan on was... when he was picked on the Lions tour to New Zealand, which was seen as a bit of a surprise inclusion at the time. He ended up starting all three tests and really making his name, internationally, I guess, making his name on that tour. The strength and depth is so insane in the back row that he's not an automatic starter in the Six Nations, but still played a major part in various ways, including the one against Murrayfield when he came in early for Caelan Doris. So Slam win is on the board now in the last few weeks.
And that was at the point where Doris was accurately being described as maybe the best back rower in the whole world on form at that time. And then Conan comes in early, as you say, in that game, and there wasn't a blip. He was brilliant. And then when he came on against England at a time when pretty much all the starters were struggling, Conan came on and was almost man of the match in the time that he came on as sub. And there was obviously that beautiful offload for the Hansen try in the corner. And doing the basics really well. But it's a funny one in that you can go from being the Lions starting number eight, correctly so, to then even your place being on the subs bench for Ireland being under question. That's the level of talent. And he finally fought off CJ Standard for the number eight position, and then Doris appears on the scene. That's going to be the case for any back rower's career. Even suddenly, like, Doris had a bit of a bad game and you know, Conan's playing great. Not that Doris is going to lose his place, but that's how competitive it is.
We'll talk to him today. But what the match itself was, I'd say, kind of grim if you support any of the other Irish provinces that isn't Leinster. How many times we say it? Oh, Leinster probably not at their best. Nobody's going to be at their best in those conditions in terms of free-flowing rugby. And yet, they handled Ulster with relative ease, I thought, in the second half.
Yeah, and Ulster didn't play badly and didn't do anything particularly wrong and were quite accurate when they needed to score their tries, when they got their chances. Stockdale played pretty well, and yet there was 15 points between the teams, three scores, and that's in the rain when generally things get narrowed a little bit on the scoreboard. And McFarlane was kind of realistic afterwards, but also a bit resigned, as in, I can't do much about the demographics. And he's right, but at the same time, there's still very simple things. Like, for example, I mean, it's so basic, but they knew that Lowry doesn't have the same length of kick as, say, James Lowe does. So literally just kicking long to Lowry, who, even when he does, he tends not to kick anyway. His instinct is to run.
Yeah.
And that means, so say Baird, for example, the time he hunted him down, like, incredible speed, agility, technique, everything to hunt down Lowry, who's really hard to nail in any conditions. But it meant that Baird didn't have to think about what other options Lowry was going to take,
because he's like, I can afford to just not worry about blocking a kick, not worry about covering the rest of the defence. Lowry's probably going to run this back. So it takes that, it takes brilliant speed and all the rest to do it, but also Baird's mind is clear there. He knows he's got one task.
Well, sorry, so are you saying Ulster, so, but how repeatedly, avoid that?
Well, repeatedly, I guess getting more options in behind Lowry, encouraging Lowry to kick more, like he ran too much, it just wasn't on. You weren't going to get through more than three or four phases. So even if he did beat the first man, which he rarely did, Ulster were never going to go through many more phases and get a better option to kick. And even if you're losing, say, 10 yards every time to Lowe kicking down to you, it's still a better option than what Lowry was taking. There's things like Balakoon, who didn't get on the ball much, and he just looks so brilliant when he gets on the ball. You wonder how the hell Ulster aren't figuring more ways to get him on it. Now, it wasn't a day for the backs. I think Stockdale was really the only one of the outside backs on either team that looked particularly good. But Leinster's basics are so their brilliant play is even further ahead of Ulster, but their basic play, just their line it and their maul and their tackling and defence and their kicking game, Gibson Park's kicking game was brilliant as well, it's just so far ahead that it just didn't feel like a contest at the end.
Speaking of that sort of basic play, did some of that let Munster down in South Africa?
Oh,
that was a bit of a shocker of a, to concede 50 points in a Champions Cup knockout game.
Yeah, and you know, after the previous game, they've conceded like 43 points on average in their last three games to Glasgow, the Scarlets and the Sharks.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's wild. And you know, early in the season, they were awful, obviously, and it was a change of regime and they changed the training patterns, all that sort of stuff. But now, like, this is, say, the most important 10 minutes of their season, I would say, was the 10 minutes after halftime when they were within 3 points of the Sharks. It's a knockout game. This is a competition they love. So this is, if you're to zone in on your season, this 10 minutes after halftime, they looked a bit bedraggled coming out anyway. It was the 29 degrees heat. But they just put in, I think, the worst 10 minutes of the season against a good team, besides those first three games when they were getting things together. Like twice Kilcoyne ran, and this was like something from 10 years ago. He's almost like a rugby league player who doesn't have to worry about the ruck or the recycle. Just ran headlong at the Sharks' defence. Made a few yards, as he always does, because he's quite explosive. No support anywhere near him. Really easy. He goes straight to ground because he's running so fast and so kind of recklessly, or not thinking about the recycle, that he goes straight to ground. It's such an easy poach for the likes of Khaleesi, and these Sharks have some great players. Just turnovers waiting to happen. And from those moments, then the Sharks kicked the corner and they've one of the best mauls in the they scored two maul tries.
But this is this, you know, with the South African teams in there, this is a worry for Munster, and I'll throw Ulster into that as well. Like, when do you see them possibly winning a Champions Cup in the next few years, given the added competition? Not just added competition, teams that, especially when you're going away, like an away match in Durban in that sort of heat against a team that good, that's the kind of thing you're going to have to navigate now, as well as trying to somehow get the better of Leinster and the English and French teams. It seems like a tall order.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like, it would take some sort of seismic change in the way Irish rugby is structured, almost like a draft system or something, I think, to drag Munster up to the level that they could win this competition again. Because don't forget, the Sharks are eighth in the URC table. They weren't in particularly good form. They've sensational rugby players like Mapimpi and Lucanio Am and all these guys, but they aren't particularly well coached. You can see how sort of fragile and brittle they are. Like, when Munster did actually get their attack going, and Munster's attack is better, but when they did get it going, there was massive holes. There was one maul defence that was a complete joke for the Sharks. So Munster kind of knew if you could get at the Sharks and be in a tight game, then you had a pretty good chance of winning it, because they look so brittle. But they just never got even close to that. And I don't know, this is more worrying even than the early season stuff.
Okay, it's all good news for Leinster, though. We can hear now from Jack Conan.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Owen, I like you and I like your style.
The second captain, we've got a bit better quality.
It's compliment any place, anywhere, all over the world.
Full of protein.
It's information, fluid information.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You can do it while you're cleaning the house, brushing your teeth, taking a bath.
Trying to be critical is going to be impossible.
Like quite a lot of you listening, I would imagine Jack Conan is still drying off after Saturday's game at the Aviva. Jack, great to chat to you again.
Thanks for having me, lads. Good to be here.
Those are pretty intense conditions. What was it like to play in on Saturday?
Pretty miserable, to be honest with you. Just obviously, you want a good day. You want a full house in the Aviva. You want the perfect conditions to play the brand of rugby that Leinster are known for and that we're so good at. So a little bit disappointing with the rain. I think we coughed up a lot of chances. We started slowly and stuff, so it was a little bit frustrating on our end, but a good way to win regardless against a good side that are highly motivated.
Does the coaching, when the weather's that bad, does the coaching become less relevant in some ways and that you just have to get your basics right and react to what's happening because there's going to be spill balls and knock-ons and all the rest?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, when you go in at half-time, the messages, there can't be too many of them because you can only play kind of a certain style of rugby, you know. There's obviously different areas they focus on, more on kind of your kicker pressure, making sure that they don't have easy outlets and easy way to kick into your own half. And I think that's something we did really well, especially in the latter stages of the half when also we're chasing the game. We didn't give them easy opportunities to just put us back in our own 22 or back in our own half. And when they're chasing the scoreline, if you can keep it down there inside their 10, inside their 22, it's near on impossible to go to length without obviously giving them easy leg ups. If you're giving away indiscipline, stuff that we did in the first kind of 5 to 10 minutes, which resulted in them obviously going up in the first few minutes of the game. So it's about just keeping it tighter, securing ball, possession rugby, playing more kind of safer rugby, but a lot more pragmatic than we would normally choose to play if we had better conditions.
It's funny, Jack. I mean, you went through, obviously, and you're unbeaten, and yet you sound kind of disappointed that you couldn't put on a show.
Yeah, I think we speak a lot about putting on a performance and putting out the best performance of a competition every game we play. So, you know, it doesn't always come to fruition. Things, lads can off days, the weather, you know, as we're talking about, plays a massive factor. So it's a little bit disappointing because you build yourself up all week to play a certain brand, to go out there and put it all together and be at your absolute best. And then it's just negated by the style of rugby that you have to play. In saying that, we're obviously really happy with how we went in some degree, playing that style of rugby against, you know, Ulster are probably more used to playing that kind of pragmatic style, kick meters, kick receipts, things like that. And things that we probably wouldn't measure as much in comparison to other teams. Leicester are similar. It's good. It's great prep for us for this week because Leicester and Ulster are very similar animals in that regard. So it was a good test for us. I think it was a really good test for the forward pack. And overall, we were pretty happy, obviously, to concede that try at the end from the Maul. Was disappointing on our behalf because we knew Ulster obviously have a very good attacking Maul and we let them get in there at the end. So, and just small bits of pressure after that. You know, Ross kicks off from the kickoff. We send it long. Just building momentum. Luckily, the work from the lads up front, the tight five and that scrum straight after that was fantastic. We turned the ball back over. But, you know, we can't afford this weekend to give Leicester those kind of opportunities because we know they'll be right back down around 22.
On a personal level, Jack, how did you manage the transition back from the Six Nations, from the Grand Slam, we should say, to this huge game? Because it's mad that you just have to kind of go straight back from one to the other.
Yeah, well, we were back in the week previously. On the Wednesday and Thursday, and that nearly broke me after the few days of celebrating. You know, after the third day on the Monday when we went out, honestly, I don't think it was right till about the Saturday morning to Sunday morning. I was still shook. At my age, 3 days in the trough like that would test any man. So I was, you know, now to be honest, coming back in the Wednesday kept you a bit more honest. You know, there was no chats of, geez, would anyone go for a pint on the Tuesday or anything like that. So lads were well behaved in that regard, but it was. It was good to get back in, but it was also physically you weren't exactly 100%. We were looked after well, and the coaches looked after us, and we got back into the structure, the systems, the calling sequences and things like that. So it was good. Look, coming back to play a massive game in the Aviva, it's easy, you know, you're excited. You're back with all your mates, all the lads, some lads you haven't seen in a while. There's an energy there, you know, it's really palpable in these European weeks that lads have that kind of bit between their teeth where they're excited to get going again and put on a good show. And, you know, it's great. European rugby for Leinster is everything. So it was a really exciting week build up.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that from the point of view of the Leinster coaches, that maybe Ireland winning the Grand Slam has its minus points as well because of those few days afterwards. Do you have to, do you have to get the okay from the Leinster coaches as well to celebrate for a few days?
We you know, Leo was, he teed us up weeks before, being like, look, lads, if you're involved in the last kind of two odd games and you've played, you know, a certain amount of minutes and all this stuff, you won't be into the Wednesday. So that was kind okay. of, we had that already in the back of the mind. We'd already that teed up. So there wasn't, you know, you're not worrying. You're not waiting for a text on Sunday being like, I'll see you at 9 o'clock in the meeting tomorrow on Monday. So we knew we had a few days to kind of let the hair down a little bit and refresh and take the foot off the pedal before giving it a lot of work for last weekend.
Yeah, and it's been a nice few weeks for you, Jack. You got obviously man of the match against Ulster in the Six Nations. You started against Italy. You came on really early in the Scotland game for Doris, scored that try in the corner off the Hansen pass, came on against England, played really well in the closing stages there as well, got the offload off for the Sheehan try. Are you happy enough with your form over the last few weeks in particular?
For me, I was pretty disappointed with how it went personally against Italy. I know as a team, we weren't happy with how we performed, but you know, I saw that as an opportunity to go really well and kind of get back into and put my hand up for starting against Scotland and things like that. And look, I didn't take that opportunity. So when I got the opportunity to come on early against Scotland, I was like, look, you know, mm-hmm. these are the few points that I took from my game against Italy that I needed to improve on or be better at. And I thought I did that, you know, well enough in the Scotland game. So I was delighted with that, just to get a run at it. Obviously, you know, I felt for Caelan picking up a knock early on because he'd gone so incredibly well in the 3 weeks, and luckily he was able to bounce back for the England game. But it was great just to kind of play such a big role in such a strange but yet fantastic game in that Scotland match, just with all the changes, all the kind of personnel that went down and the way we finished as a team. I think I look back over the last few weeks in green, and that was kind of the game that stands out for me as just kind of being so galvanizing and such a good test for us. Mm-hmm. I think if you fast forward a few months to the World Cup, that's the kind of thing that can happen when lads are backing up games and every game is must win and so important. It was a really special outing for us.
Yeah. What's more enjoyable? I love watching those offloads. Doris did one against France as well on the opposite wing. But your one to Sheehan, do you prefer the try or the offload? What's more exciting or enjoyable?
Oh, I'd rather be getting the try, but it was it was nice. It was nice to, you know, because there was a kind of a certain palpable nerves around the England game, I think, with the probably added distraction of it being at home, it being Paddy's weekend, Grand Slam decider against England. You could feel the kind of nervous energy. Whereas for myself, because I was on the bench, I felt that bit more relaxed because you're thinking, I'm not, obviously last week I had my kind of, not my scare, but you're like, you're on after 8 minutes where I'm like, realistically, that's not going to happen again. You know, it's such a rarity in rugby that happens. So I'm thinking, right, I'm not really going to get on here early. And then obviously not hoping that when the lads picks up a knock right like that. So, you know, it gets to kind of 45, 55 minutes. You're thinking, right, I need to be at my best when I get on. I'm going to only get a moment or two, if anything. And just to play even a small part in such a great game and such a kind of historic event that was that, to have made that offload, you know, it's something that will stay with me for the rest of my days. And just, you know, when I threw it, I trusted that Dan was there beside me. So I threw him, and then, you know, I think Paulie pulled me up on the Sunday night. We were having a few drinks. He goes, I won't try to do his accent, but he was, did you watch your celebration when Chino got in the corner? And I was, you know, like, fist pumping like mad and stuff. And I was like, oh, Paulie, don't say that to me. Like, I can't look back. You know, I had the celebration, the one-arm celebration, walking away from the Scotland try. In the moment, you're like, it's just pure euphoria or whatever, and you're over the moon. But then afterwards, I'm like, Jesus, would I ever not do something so embarrassing and just kind of like pat the lads in the back, whatever. I'm there, like, Dan scores in the corner. I'm like, just driving my fist into the air a few times. Yeah. I'm like, I can't look that back. But it's
hang on, what's great. What does Paul O'Connor want? Yeah, does Paul O'Connor want you to be like, you know, a soccer player from the 1930s? You know, you everyone scores a try, shakes hand and walks back to the centre circle.
Yeah. No, quite the opposite. Actually, Paulie was loving it. He was like, I absolutely loved it. It was pure emotion for me and all this stuff. Great. And I was like, oh, like, we were having a few pints at this stage. I was like, oh, geez, Paulie, don't say that to me now. You give me the fear. I can't even think of it, you know? So he was absolutely loving it, because he was like, it was just raw emotion from you and to see how much it meant for you and stuff like that. So, it was amazing. A great moment. And
it's amazing to get those, because this, in a lot of sports, you see players almost try to contain it too much. And I don't think it impacts performance. Maybe it does for some people, and maybe some players feel like they need to contain themselves. But certainly for fans or anybody watching, it's brilliant to see people celebrating.
Absolutely. And, you know, we're in such a fortunate position to do what we love. And, you know, it's a great lifestyle. You get to go out with your mates. And I think that Ireland squad at the moment, the way it is, that the people that Faz and Paulie and Caddy and Foggs and stuff have brought together inside, like, unbelievable group of lads. Like, there really is such a kind of camaraderie and a closeness to the point I've never witnessed with any other team that I've been involved with. And it's really special, and it means so much to you. So, you know, when you have moments like that, it's worth embracing and celebrating, because, you know, it won't be too long before we're all on the other side of it. So, you know, I think in those moments of celebrating, scoring those tries or throwing offloads, and it's just, that's your raw emotion, how you really feel about it. So I think it's probably a change from regimes of past coaches, where it used to be called no hot dogging was what it was called. So if you scored a try or did something, you weren't allowed to go too over the top.
Yeah. I think we might know a particular coach you might be mentioning there, Jack. But just on the I've heard a lot of people talk about it. Every player, unprompted, like you there, talks about this spirit and all that kind of thing. Did the spirit come first and then the winning? Or does the spirit come from you win a load of matches together? And of course, everyone loves each other when you start winning Grand Slams and beating the All Blacks.
Look, it goes hand in hand, doesn't it? Because it's easy to love camp when you're winning. You know, it's easier to enjoy the time you have with people and enjoy the time you have in camp when you're, you know, one of the most successful Irish teams of all time. You go down and you beat New Zealand. That's never been done in their home soil. You know, you create these fantastic memories and stuff. So, yeah, it's a lot easier when you're winning. But I think the emphasis that Faz and the coaching staff put on being yourself, being vulnerable, being a good bloke, early on, you know, 2-3 years ago when he first came in, allows for people just to relax a little bit. There's no kind of facades. There's no egos to it at all. So, you know, you can be yourself. You can be comfortable around it. I think, you know, enjoying yourself is hugely important in the environment. Foggs has his bit of crack on a Tuesday morning or a Wednesday morning, and we all get together and he comes up with some silly game and stuff. And it just kind of diffuses the tension at times, because obviously, you know, you're prepping for these massive games and everyone cares so much. You can't be that pent up about it the whole time. You can't be stressed and worried about it the whole time. So to have that bit of crack and just kind of release the pressure valve a little bit, I think it's hugely important. I think the coaching staff in there has gotten that really, really finely tuned.
You said vulnerable there. What does that mean, that you're allowed to be vulnerable in the group?
I think it's about having no assumptions. You know, if you know, it's probably that old saying, you know, there are no stupid questions. So if you're in a team meeting and we're going through plays or we're going through video of a past game and you're thinking, well, you know, you have a question to ask, you know, ask the question, because more than likely there's probably someone else in the group, someone else in the environment thinking the exact same thing. So maybe they don't feel comfortable enough. Maybe they're newer to the environment, but they don't feel they have maybe the weight behind their own voice, or maybe they're just a bit more insular than someone else, so they wouldn't want to come forward and say, oh, actually, Faz, I'm just wondering, you know, should I do this here? Should I do that? And, you know, you can put a lot of other lads' minds at ease by asking one question that someone else might think is really obvious and not necessary to ask. But I think it's that kind of buy-in that lads are vulnerable enough to say, look, I actually don't know what the right thing is here to do. And then, you know, if you've got so much experience in the room, you know, you've always one of the backs, you've got Johnny and Murray and stuff, and lads of 100 tests, and, you know, they've done it all, seen it all. So don't be afraid to ask the question. Be vulnerable, be open, be willing to learn, be willing to help other people out as well. You know, if you have a kind of a coaching cue of your own to share with one of your teammates, do it, you know. And even if, you know, I'm looking at something like, oh, I, you know, in this passage of play, I wanted you to do this, and you're thinking this, you know, if you're the person who's been told maybe you got that wrong, be okay with it. Be selfless enough to know that it's for the better good of the entire environment and for the team. So not to have an ego about it and think, oh, Jesus, he's coming at me here and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So I think it's massively important for the growth of an organisation.
The last time we talked to you, Jack, was when you were picked on the Lions squad, which was obviously a huge moment for you. Fair to say you grasped that opportunity really well. You went over, you started all three tests. How much of that impact your view of your own abilities and your sort of status within the game?
Yeah, like as I said to you, you know, 2 years ago, I was shocked to get picked. You know, I didn't think I was ever really going to. Obviously, I wanted and I hoped and I dreamt of it, but I never really thought it was going to happen. So when I got that opportunity, I said to myself, day one, I'm going to take this and I'm going to run with it and be the best version of myself. And, you know, I was really pleased with how I went personally over there, but obviously the results didn't show fully. You know, I think I've had a bit of a strange kind of season last year. By my own admission, I wasn't at the level that I should have been for reasons outside of rugby, probably more than that now. But, you know, I feel like I've bounced back well in the last few weeks in particular. And it's just, you know, I finished the tour and I went on. I played the first few games in that November internationals in 21 and picked up a knock against Argentina, didn't play, and then came into Christmas time. Wales started, France played, then dropped, and then I'm back. And I went through a bit of an up and down time, but I think I'll always back myself, even if my performances haven't been at the right level. I always know there's more in me. I always know I can do more and be better for it. And I think going on that line sort just kind of solidified my own thoughts that, you know, you were well able for the top level of rugby and you should never have any doubts about it. And I think doubts are obviously something that creeps in when performances kind of waver a little bit, but just to stay true to task and keep on pushing yourself. And I know if I'm working hard, I know it'll come back around for me.
That up and down time you mentioned, Jack, just you said for reasons outside of rugby, is that something that you're comfortable going into in a chat here?
Yeah, well, I won't go into too much detail about it, but I was struggling with energy a lot post kind of Christmas of 21, and I knew I played that Six Nations, and I just knew something wasn't right, physically, medically, and it was like that for months, good few months. And I couldn't train as hard as I wanted. I couldn't perform at the level I wanted. And, you know, I ended up getting a series of tests on. And after about 4 or 5 months, they kind of found a certain abnormality in some regard. And it's been rectified now. It took a few months even post that to kind of things, energy level to come back to the point where I felt like I was myself again, you know, for a long time there I didn't. So, and you know, it's something I held with me for a long, long time, and I couldn't let go of it, because every game, every training session, all I was thinking about was, how am I going to feel, how tired am I going to be? And I kind of did a bit of work with Gary Keegan in Irish camp, and I sat down, and you know, the coaching staff in Ireland and Leinster are fully aware of these you know, of this event and things. So I sat down with him one day, and he was like, you need to let it go. Do you know what I mean? You need to forgive yourself for not being at the level you wanted to be at. You know, that's in the past now. You need to release it. And it took me a while, but it did. And I feel like I'm better for it. And, you know, the last 2 weeks is probably the best rugby I've played in a long, long time. And I was, you know, to have that cameo off the bench for Scotland, that was the first game that I was playing. And I was like, I feel like myself. I feel like me again. And it was just huge mentally for me. It really was. It was a massive release. And I'm just enjoying it more. You know, I'm enjoying more the last few weeks because I feel like I'm back. You know, and I feel like I was probably counted out there for a while, but I feel like I've bounced back all right.
Oh yeah, well listen, it's great to hear that you got to the bottom of whatever that is, and I guess it must have been such a relief just to get whatever diagnosis it was, because obviously whatever was happening, when you don't know why it's happening, it's probably the scariest part.
Yeah, absolutely, and that was it, because I got a few certain blood tests on, and it didn't, nothing showed up, and then, you know, subsequently I picked up an injury, and then I ended up getting more done, and then it finally came up, and it was the not knowing that was killing me, because a bit in my head was like, do I just have long COVID here? You know what I mean? Like COVID over the Christmas previously leading up to November 22. Six Nations 22.
Yeah.
I was like, do I just have long COVID here? Am I just struggling because of that? And I'm sure that probably didn't help, but, you know, it turned out to be something else. And I got a lot of peace when I finally found out what it was. And that was the kind of the start of the journey about getting back to who I am and the player that I am.
Would you say you're 100% now, Jax, physically and psychologically? Because it sounds like it knocked you for a while.
It definitely knocked me for a long time. I'd say I'm. I don't know. You're always, you know, comparing things, and you know, I don't remember how tired I was in certain games or how shagged you were in, you know, the 60th minute of a game and things like that, but I definitely feel like I'm better, do you know what I mean? A lot better than I was. Not that I was sick with it, do you know what I mean? I wasn't anything like that, but it was enough to affect my performance and kind of my day to day training, things like that. But I'm definitely mentally I'm back. I feel like the building blocks of that have been the performances for the last few weeks. That's the bit that's kind of, if I can stack those performances together and I'm just getting better each time. And obviously, look, there's going to be moments where, you know, I'm not, you know, man of the match, or I'm not, you know, I haven't made 20 carries for 100 meters or something like that. And that's fine. And I'll be okay with that. But once I'm feeling good when I'm playing, then I'm happy, because I know I'll be able to put myself about and put myself in the right positions.
Do you feel almost by thinking less about your energy issues that your energy started to come back?
Absolutely. 100%. Because for that stage, so much of my mental prep for a week was hoping that I was going to feel 100%, hoping that my energy was going to be 100%. So, you know, my detail around, like my detail of the game wasn't bad. Like I'm always nailed on with my roles and everything like that, and none of that changed. But maybe in the moments when you're out on the pitch, instead of thinking to myself, can I curse here?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, I'm not thinking to myself, geez, I'm absolutely fucked here. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not getting off the ground being like, fuck me, I need to get off this pitch. I can't do it. I'm shagged and things like that. So, I'm able to just think about the next moment, my next role, and not have that kind of internal dialogue of, you're tired, you're really fatigued here, you know, that kind of negative narrative that went on in the back of my head for so long. And obviously, if you constantly negatively reinforce thoughts in your head, more often than not, they are the thoughts that first came to my mind. So even when I started to feel better, It took me a while to transition from that kind of negative self-talk to a more kind of focused, in the moment, mindful approach to playing the game, instead of kind of just being in the back of my head a lot.
Gary Keegan seems to be amazing. Like, I've heard such praise from nearly all the players in the squad that we've heard talk about him. What specifically do you think about him, or that chat with him helped you unlock it?
Yeah, well, firstly, you know, Gary, I think, is someone who came in at a great time for Irish rugby, and I think he's added a lot. He doesn't speak too often. He's always available. He always throw a message into the WhatsApp group or something like that, being like, lads, if anyone wants a one-on-one this evening, pick me up, you know, text me, let me know. So he's always available as a resource to use. But he's, I loved my few encounters with Gary to just help frame my mindset for a game, to kind of declutter my mind, to, you know, keep the main thing the main thing. And I think with rugby, with Ireland and with Leinster, there's, you can get so caught up in minute details of things, of your exact role and exact moments and what you need to do when you see a certain picture. You need to trust your training to allow yourself for that, for a lot of it to be habitual, for a lot of it to be just the practice that you've put in over the months, the years, the weeks, or whatever it is. So certain things don't need a whole lot of mental prep for. So I found Gary great for just narrowing my focus, and that's something we spoke a lot over, especially the last 2 weeks of the campaign in with Ireland, because that Italy week, I felt myself that I was trying to worry about all of my little roles the whole time. And instead of having a real narrow view, I had this really wide view of the entire game. So yeah, my focus wasn't specific on certain things. It was kind of blurred and focusing on too many things. So I think he's been great for someone who, for me personally and for the squad. You know, I think he's someone who grasps the mood of the squad and speaks to them. You know, we probably have a few meetings with him a week or things like that. And he's great at just helping lads narrow the focus and put in those building blocks mentally for the week ahead, for the game, for your training sessions and things like that. So he's added massive amount of value in the short amount of time he's been with the squad.
Were you reluctant at all to tell your coaches or your teammates about those issues you were having? Because I can imagine thinking, geez, especially with the competition for places in Leinster and Ireland, I don't really want to be telling people that I'm low on energy here.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't at the start, because, you know, I went into that Six Nations in 22, and even though I hadn't been feeling great leading up to it, you know, I'd gone from starting two out of the three. I was due to start three out of the three games in November past, and I was like, right, I'm not, this is my first real crack at international rugby, really. Because a lot of the time, I got capped in 2015. I didn't get my next cap to 2017. I had a few caps there. I got captain. I went to the World Cup in 2019. And then I didn't play to 2021, you know. So I've had long enough periods out of the game where I was like, I'm not letting this opportunity slip by, which ultimately was the wrong mindset, because my performance is being affected. So I should have spoke up. I should have been able to speak up, and not due to anyone else's fault. It was purely myself. I should have gone and done something earlier about it, instead of letting it affect my performance, you know. But still, at that stage, I just thought it was long COVID or something like that. You know what I mean? So, I wanted to seize the opportunity ahead of me, and I just wasn't able to.
And you're pretty confident now. This is manageable at this point. You seem to be confident that you're on top of whatever.
Yeah, it's 100%. It's put to bed at this stage. It's done and dealt with, and you know, I've had enough adversity throughout the years, injury-wise and stuff like this, but this was something different altogether. You know, with an injury, you rehab it and you fix the problem and then it's fine, where this was, you know, ongoing and everyday kind of... an everyday thing that affected my performances. So, luckily now, happy to the work through, you know, the doctors and Leinster, you know, John Ryan, the doctor in Leinster, the doc, Kieran Cosgrave in Ireland, the physios in Leinster, I've been able to put to bed, and it's thankfully by me.
It's shown on the pitch, I have to say, Jack. And when you've come through the other side, horrible as it is to go through, when you've come through the other side of that thing, it's not like a normal injury, it's not like a loss of form or the other things that happen in the normal run of rugby. If you get through it, you must kind of feel extra resilient.
Yeah, absolutely. I always would have thought I was resilient anyway, because I wouldn't say it's always been easy for me, you know, and it's not easy for a lot of lads, you know, it never is. Just the highs and lows of the game affect everyone. So I always would have thought I was fairly resilient, but this was definitely a different level of a test for my kind of my own mental strength. And I feel, I wouldn't say I feel better for it. I would like to have not gone through it, but yeah. I'm here now. I'm, you know, I've been so fortunate that I've played as much as I have in the last kind of 2 years, and it's just good to have behind me and to feel like I can perform again. And I think the last 3 weeks, the last three games in particular, have shown that.
Absolutely, Jack. I tell you, we never really know what's going on behind the scenes and going on in all the lives of you lads. So we do appreciate you talking to us about that. And listen, keep going with the great season you're having. Thanks so much for chatting to us today.
Thanks, William. Thanks for having me.
Most sports nutrition experts would argue that the fueling begins, in fact, the most important element of it is the day before, particularly the night before. So maybe could you take us through your routine?
To win the Premier League, it's a war on nutrition.
Okay, well, the night before I had sort of a chicken salad.
Yeah, perfect.
Lovely, perfect.
I put a bit of pesto on. I mean, I put half a jar of
pesto. That's too much pesto, but it's not the end of the world.
And I actually bulked up that chicken salad with a bit of Israeli couscous.
We're still okay. We're still in the realms of pretty good nutrition, I would say, the day before a race.
I had two beers.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
Okay, not ideal, but not the end of the world.
I had a small Pringles.
You know the Ritter Sport bars?
I hadn't seen cornflake one before.
Nobody had any soup to start with, nobody had any puddings to finish with, they had fish and chips.
Okay, I had a whiskey and coke.
No, come on, not great. Not after the beers.
Well, it was a whiskey and coke zero.
You know, you probably know what direction I was thinking. I'll have another whiskey.
You could have one drink, no more, and then you're back to the hotel and you're off to bed.
Then I was thinking, what will I have?
You know what, I'll
have a cup of tea.
Okay, perfect.
I had tea, then I had a few digestive biscuits.
Well, there was a suggestion that there was sort of an all-you-can-eat sort of a thing going on.
I wasn't counting them. They were like buns to an elephant. I was just hoovering them up. And then just before I went to bed, I had a slice of toast with Nutella.
No!
It was whole grain. It was whole grain bread.
The Six Nations continues, Simon, the Women's Six Nations. And it's a... Jesus, tough old slog for Ireland.
Yeah.
53-3 beaten by France. And they were never going to compete. And it's not... Yeah. It's one of these weird things. I don't know how you even analyse. I find people are struggling to analyse these games
completely.
As one-offs, because the structural problems are just so much deeper than an individual game that everybody knows going in is going to be a heavy defeat one way.
And the whole competition's like that. You know, every game, the result is fairly predictable.
Besides England, France.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's tricky when the result, the scoreline... And even how the scoreline will come about is so predictable. And not just sort of from week to week or short term. You know, you could have said 12 months ago, this would be the scoreline, and you kind of get within 10 points of where it might be, irrespective of whether Sevens players were coming in and out. And it's been coming a long time, and it's going to take a long time to improve. And in the meantime, the games, like trying to hammer the coach or some of the players, it feels kind of pointless, doesn't it? Because the gap is so big. Like, say you had a mastermind of a coaching performance against France. There might be 10 points less in the difference between it. You know, say, you know, some brilliant coach took over at the top of the game and just put together the best game plan this Irish squad could ever put together. It'd still be 40 points in it.
Yeah.
That's the difference between the talented player. So I don't see it changing this year or next year. Maybe incrementally, but nothing that makes the result in doubt.
Okay, we've loads of great stuff coming up later on. That doesn't really tee up the rest of the Six Nations too well from an Irish point of view, but what can you do?
Well, the Scotland game is potentially winnable.
Okay.
Even Italy is starting to look unwinnable for Ireland. That's how bad it is, yeah.
Right, we've got a lot coming up during the week. The GAA, as I mentioned earlier on, there's a lot of football on. Ken has tentatively predicted an Everton victory against Spurs tonight from our other podcast today. Did you really predict that, or did I just put those
words
in your
mouth? I think I ended up predicting it.
I predicted an
Everton win by mistake.
Why not? Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks, Simon.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks, Karen.
Thanks so much for listening.
I'm sorry, Simon. Thank you, Simon. Okay.
Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget the Second Captain's podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. To stop hearing the ads during the show, you can sign up now to the World Service on secondcaptains.com. Thanks again.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.